We are back at it with the Patriots in Pinstripes podcast with the New York Yankees AA affiliate, the Somerset Patriots. He's Eli Fishman, I'm Stephen Cusimano, and we come to you at the midway point of the 2024 season. Lots of great stuff happening. Ben Rice called up to the big leagues. The Patriots entering the second half with high hopes after a playoff run each of the last two seasons. And I guess coming out of the first half, that's kind of the vibe right now. You've got a lot of optimism, some great players that are going to get healthy very soon, and man, the first half was a blast, but I think that the second half has potential to be even better.
And there's a lot of excitement surrounding some names that could potentially come off the injured list, but especially a lot of guys in the roster that we are just seeing the tip of the iceberg on. I mean, we have seen flashes of greatness from the guys like J.C. Ascara. Jared Wagner has been one of the most consistent hitters at the plate over the past few weeks, and he's a guy that was still playing college baseball at Arkansas a year ago. So we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg of these guys. There's a lot of time left. There's an entire half. We could see more reinforcements on the way as well. So there's definitely a lot to look forward to.
Well, especially on this episode of the Patriots and Pinstripes podcast, because we like to always bring a guest or two or three on every podcast. But we had such a great conversation with today's guest that he is the only guest on this week's podcast. And it is the guy who I call Mr. Patriot himself. That is Max Burt, who is now in his sixth season with the New York Yankees organization. He has spent all 4 years of the Yankees affiliation in Somerset with extensive time with the Patriots. He was here for the championship in 2022, and man, he is one of the most motivational, inspirational people around because he's just spent his entire life overcoming the odds, going all the way back to when he was in high school to college, and he is still grinding away here in Somerset and has been such a joy to have around every single year here with the Patriots, and we wish him nothing but the best, but Max was just an outstanding guest on this week's episode.
Inspirational, outstanding, motivational. I just want to get under a bench press. Try and hit my Max with Max Burt firing me up, and that's exactly what you're going to hear in this interview. I mean, this is a guy, you walk in the door, you see him working. It takes minutes for you to see the kind of ball player he is, and you know, he is one of those special talents we've seen because of what he does on and off the field as a leader. This is a guy that has played over 450 minor league games, but he is still pushing, still going, still grinding. Everything he's learned along the way, the mental side of the game, this was just an awesome conversation.
And just for some background, you know, if you're a relatively new listener or if you're maybe a casual Yankees fan that doesn't know a lot about Max Burt, he was a 28th round pick of the Yankees out of Northeastern University in Boston, 2018. So this would be technically the final year of his rookie deal with the Yankees, but you mentioned it, over 450 games, a guy that's made his living as really a defensive wizard. He can play literally anywhere on the diamond, and in fact, through his almost 500 career games, he's appeared everywhere except for catcher and center field, and we've seen him be a magician down at third base, shortstop. He's been playing a lot of first base recently for the Patriots, and he's coming off back-to-back career seasons. 2022, which he spent all of with Somerset, hit a career-high 11 homers, a career-high 19 steals, all the other offensive highs, and then backed it up last year with career highs in those numbers with 12 homers, 21 steals, and everything else across the board. Career highs in RBIs, runs scored, you name it. Max Burt coming off of his fifth season, his best one yet, and had to overcome a hand injury to start this season. Was on the Patriots break camp roster, an everyday starter, bouncing between his primary position, shortstop, and third base. And then, unfortunately, Max got hit in the hand by a pitch on Somerset's first road trip in New Hampshire. Missed nearly 2 months, but rehabbed from a fractured hand already, and is back in the Patriots lineup contributing every single day. And like you said, a guy that when you show up to the ballpark, you know, we're here from early in the morning, he's always the first one in, he's the last one out, he's putting in all the reps, even when he doesn't have to, and just such an impressive guy to have as a role model and as a consummate professional on this team and in the Yankees organization. So we're going to hear a little bit about Max Burt's baseball life, his career in baseball, just his baseball journey, just motivating guys along the way and seeing some of his closest friends like Anthony Volpe and Austin Wells and Blake Perkins graduate onto successful big league careers. So without further ado, here is that conversation between the two of us and Max Burt. Back on the Patriots and Pinstripes podcast and alongside Eli Fishman, Stephen Cusimano here with you. Our guest this week is Max Burt, Mr. Patriot. You've been here all 4 years of the affiliation, and Max, it's awesome to have you here first and foremost, and we really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
I got to start, first of all, with the fact that you were on the break camp roster, but obviously missed a lot of time with the hand injury, so we didn't have a chance to really see you go through the motions of your Celtics winning the NBA Finals. What was that like for you?
Huge, huge. You know, I can't say I was following them a lot throughout the year, but, you know, obviously, you know, with Tatum, Brown, you know, the whole crew, and then getting those pieces, you know, like White, Porzingis, and Drew Holiday. You know, it's that this team is not only built to win, obviously, this year, but I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with here in the coming years. So,
and you are a tough guy to keep off of a baseball field. You hurt your hand second week of the season, and then right after you're out fielding grounders with one hand. You know, you're coming through the rehab. Just for you, how great is it to be back, and special is it, you know, to be back in this groove?
Yeah, it definitely feels great to be back. You know, obviously, as a baseball player, you never want to sit. You always want to play. You want to be out there. It's what I love to do. So, but, you know, my main goal, you know, even when I'm playing and not playing, it's really just to, you know, continue to get better every day. I want to be, you know, at my best at the end of the season. So, you know, even when I can't, you know, actually be out in the field, you know, I'll do anything in my power to kind of get better, whether that be, you know, working on my hands and doing all that kind of stuff. So for me, obviously, it feels great to be back. And, you know, I'm continuing to, you know, get better every day. So
you coach up the kids in the complex quite a bit, I would hope.
Yeah, no, I definitely you know, I like helping those guys out. Obviously, there's a, you know, bunch of guys down there, young kids from all different walks of life. So it's cool to kind of see how they are. And, you know, there's a bunch of kids that work their ass off down there. So it's cool to see.
Well, for you, I mean, you were coming off back-to-back basically career seasons. You set career highs in homers and steals 2 years in a row. And obviously having to start the year where usually, I mean, the past couple of years, you've had a great offensive start to the season, and having to overcome this, where do you feel like you're at now? Do you feel like this is kind of your spring training, or do you feel like you're pretty much back fully healthy and just, you know, where you should be?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's not easy, you know, getting hurt and then, you know, having to come back, go through rehab, all that kind of stuff like that. But I feel like I'm in a good place now. Obviously not the start I wanted the season, but like I said before, you know, I want to be at my best at the end of the year. You know, I've had seasons where I've, you know, been super hot to start and then kind of cool down. And then there's seasons, you know, where, you know, I'm cool to start and then I go through a hot patch, then back to cool. So obviously every season's different. And, you know, I'm kind of going day by day here. And, you know, I really am feel like I'm getting better. And yeah, you know, I want to be at my best and, you know, having a great year at the end of the year.
Well, you mentioned, I remember last year, you got off to a really hot start. And I remember you talked to the media sometime in April and you discussed a lot of the kind of mental factors that came along with just keeping yourself in a good headspace, not beating yourself up over every single pitch and every single at bat. And seeing how far you've come a year from then now, I mean, where do you feel like you've come the furthest over this past year at Double A?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I think, you know, getting hurt this year, you know, I really wasn't in a great place mentally kind of to start the year. Obviously, didn't start the year how I wanted to. You know, I was, whatever, 3-for-28 to start. But, you know, I really know I needed to make a change. And I know I've obviously needed to, you know, improve my mental game kind of throughout the years. That's obviously, you know, it's going to be with me and I'm going to have to work on that my whole career. But you know, I met a guy here that I became really tight with here, and he's helped me a lot. And, you know, I really took pride in, kind of improving that mental game. And, you know, I'm a guy that would always get caught up on results, always chasing results, chasing hits, trying to force things to happen. And, you know, it's not a way to play the game. You know, it's too, you're going to, you know, kill yourself if you keep doing that. So, you know, it's something that, you know, obviously I'm still working on. You know, you go through, you know, blips of, you know, being really good mentally and then, you know, obviously not so good. So it's a constant battle. But, you know, all the greats, all the best, you know, can stay even keeled and, you know, stay at that even level every day. So that's kind of what I'm striving to do. And yeah, you know, I just want to just, like I said earlier, just kind of continue to keep on going and getting better. And, you know, everybody's path is different. Mine's obviously been different. So I'm just kind of taking every day for what it is.
And I mean, we probably saw it day one. We've seen you for a couple of years here now, but you can see day one, you know, you put your heart out there in this game. You're, you know, the ultimate competitor. You ball out on the field. And obviously you've talked about too, just that desire to win, that desire to be the best you can. Did you just come out of the womb like, you know, ice in your veins, a competitor? Where did that, you know, competitive, winning, culture-building nature come from?
I would have to say from my parents. That's all I know how to do. I've never really known to do anything any other way. Whether it was a kid, you know, making diving catches, you know, or, you know, winning, you know, games in coach pitch, it was all about winning. And obviously my dad being sports guy, being around winning cultures his whole really career, being in Boston, covering, you know, Patriots, covering Celtics, covering Red Sox. So, you know, he's seen it. He sees, you know, what it takes to get to certain levels. You know, he always tells a story he told me as a kid, you know, when Dustin Pedroia was one of the best second basemen. You know, he was my favorite player growing up. And, you know, he would go to the field early, and, you know, Pedroia would be taking 100 ground balls before every game. And it was something like, you know, he's the best at his position in the league, and he's doing this much work. So, you know, me hearing that and seeing that and, you know, having great stories from my dad has, you know, instilled in me, like, I need to work. I don't want anybody to outwork me. That's kind of my mantra. And, you know, that's kind of where I get it from, my parents. So, obviously I'm forever grateful for that. And, you know, I strive to do that and continue to do that for my whole life. So,
and we've seen kind of the values and the work ethic during your time as a professional, but going back even to your time at a very competitive high school scene at St. John's Prep, take me through when you were growing up. What was it like having to earn that opportunity, not be handed it, and just show that you were a gamer and just that the work ethic can take over?
Yeah, you know, so for me, I was always a small guy. You know, my freshman year of high school, I was 5'2", 120 pounds, super small. Not, you know, I was athletic, I was fast, but I wasn't physical. I wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything that was like, wow, this kid is, you know, different. It was obviously my competitive juices were definitely different, but, you know, I always knew I had what it took, but other people didn't really see that right away. And, you know, so I'm in eighth grade. I want to go to St. John's Prep. I do a little shadow day there and loved it, loved everything about it. You know, loved the culture, loved the brotherhood, the, you know, that everybody had, all the guys. It was great. So I ended up going to St. John's Prep. And obviously, you know, this is a prep school, day school prep school, but, you know, school where all the best athletes from, you know, the area kind of go to the school. And, you know, for me, so I didn't play a fall sport. I was kind of playing, you know, basketball and baseball are my two sports going in. Obviously I played golf, but, you know, I wanted to focus on, you know, basketball in the fall. And then obviously baseball was going to be, you know, end of winter / spring. And, so I ended up, you know, having a great start to my freshman year. I ended up making the JV team as a freshman, which was great. And you know, that was the year Pat Connaughton was in school. So he was kind of the face of the school. And, I ended up having a great year that year in basketball. I ended up getting called up to the varsity at the end of the season to kind of be that scout team shooter when we, you know, cause obviously we're going to play some good teams throughout the postseason. But, you know, just being a part of that team, seeing, you know, kind of how Pat Connaughton, you know, went about his business and, you know, seeing him on a day to day at every practice and seeing his competitive nature just helped me, you know, tremendously. And, yeah. And then that just kind of continued into baseball. You know, it went from, you know, basketball ends, obviously baseball starts. And, you know, baseball, I would say, is, you know, probably the most competitive sport at St. John's Prep. Obviously, you know, we had two freshman teams just because there were so many kids trying out. And I was the B team second baseman. You know, we had, you know, I was one of the little guys. I wasn't, you know, a great hitter, but I was, you know, the B team second baseman, not playing that much, you know, playing once, twice a week. And, you know, a guy ended up getting hurt and I kind of jumped into that position. And obviously, and I, you know, finished the year, you know, playing every day as the second baseman, that freshman year. But that was, you know, it was a situation where, you know, my dad, you know, would tell me, he goes, listen, if you can't play at the prep, you know, you can't play college baseball and you definitely can't play pro ball. So, you know, I think, you know, you see a lot of times with kids now, it's, you know, when the going gets tough, it's like, all right, I want to, you know, go transfer, or go to a different place. And, you know, obviously I had great, you know, parents that, you know, pushed me and said, no, this is what you're going to do. And, obviously I'm very lucky for that, but, you know, I stayed with it and kind of continued to just kind of keep going. And, you know, we'll kind of fast forward, played, you know, JV my sophomore year. That's when I kind of started to grow a little bit. So I started playing shortstop a lot. So I was basically the everyday shortstop my JV sophomore year. And then junior year baseball, you know, there was, we were loaded, had like 10, 12 seniors that were, you know, everyday guys that played last year. So it was, you know, a hard team to make, let alone play. And I think I was one of maybe three or four juniors on the team. There was only one other position player. The rest were pitchers. And yeah, I played shortstop half the game. So our ace pitcher was also our shortstop. And I played half the games at shortstop. And I got DH four. So, because obviously he pitched and hit. Mm-hmm. So, they used the DH in my spot. So I was just playing strictly defensive shortstop. Had a great year defensively. Obviously I'd hope so when you can't hit or can't do anything else. But, you know, that was a weird time. 'Cause it was like, you know, yeah, there wasn't any juniors playing, but it was almost like, you know, embarrassing in a way where it's like, I'm a player. I want to hit, and I'm not a defense only guy. But anyways, that's kind of what happened. And then, you know, senior year comes along. You know, I play summer ball going into my senior year and get recruited a little bit by colleges. You know, some basically a bunch of D3s in the NESCAC, you know, Bates, schools like that. Some D2s like St. Anselm's, St. Anselm's. And then Northeastern kind of came in. Liked me as a player, liked me as a competitor. They didn't have any scholarship money for me, or, you know, Coach Glavin probably didn't really see me as a scholarship player. So, you know, I go into my senior year and, you know, he offers me a spot on the team. And, you know, I was young for my grade, so I kind of always believed I was a scholarship player to play at that Division I level. Obviously, I had aspirations of playing D1 and playing pro ball, so I didn't really want to settle for anything else. So I was kind of set on doing a post-grad year. I was going to do it, which is, you know, common for in the Northeast, where there's a bunch of those prep schools, you know, like Phillips Andover, Phillips Exeter, Salisbury, Avon Old Farms, all those kind of schools. And so, yeah, I applied to Phillips Andover and Phillips Exeter. This is, you know, during my senior year, probably fall, winter time. You know, I apply and I go on these visits, loved both the schools, didn't really care which school I ended up at. I honestly probably wanted to go to Exeter because it was a little bit further away from my house. You know, I'm from North Andover. Phillips Andover is, you know, 10 minutes from my house. So I wanted to get away, bored, kind of do that kind of thing. I ended up, you're the number one recruit, basketball and baseball, shouldn't be a problem. And I remember the day I was at St. John's Prep my senior year. It was beginning of springtime, middle of spring. And I had a couple other buddies that applied to these schools. And, you know, just because no one really played until their senior year. So they wanted that extra year to get recruited. And everybody's coming back saying, bro, I got waitlisted. I'm waitlisted. Everyone's getting waitlisted. And I'm thinking like, oh, man, that stinks. Like, there's no chance I'm getting waitlisted. And sure enough, I opened up my email that day. I got waitlisted at both schools. And those are the only two schools I applied to. And now we're in the middle of the spring. So I'm kind of panicking, but not panicking, knowing I'm, you know, going to be somewhere next year. But obviously, you know, have to continue the process and go look at more schools. So, you know, I go to Salisbury School, which was amazing. Loved Salisbury School. But their PGs were already filled up, so didn't have room. I go to Avon Old Farms. I liked it. Loved the baseball coach, loved the baseball program, but it was just kind of like, it was an older school. And I just didn't love it. You know, I didn't, but it was one of those things where this might be the only option. So that really was the only option. I could have gone to one other school, but it just didn't fit. It didn't kind of line with what I wanted. So, you know, I was set on committing to Avon Old Farms, even though I didn't really want to do that. And you know, I'm staying in contact with Coach Glavin at Northeastern because obviously, you know, he still offered me a spot on the team. And I go to a game in the spring. And keep in mind, I'm now graduated my senior year of high school. So I don't know where I'm going to school crossing graduation my senior year. And, you know, I go to Northeastern because he told me to, you know, let him know where I end up going. And I tell him, hey, coach, I think I'm going to commit to Avon Old Farms. And he's like, all right, well, are you sure? Like, you know, are you sure you don't want to come here? And, you know, I'm like, coach, this is, you know, I feel the exact same. I feel like I'm a scholarship player. And if there's no scholarship money, then, you know, I'm going to, you know, go bet on myself and go to Avon Old Farms and see if I can get picked up or get offered by a different school. And he's like, all right, well, I want to meet with you and your parents, you know, before you make this decision. So we ended up meeting maybe a couple days later at a Starbucks. I'll never forget it. And it's me, my mom, my dad, and Coach Glavin. And he said, you know, I think you can play here next year. I think you can start as a freshman. You know, we're going to have guys get drafted. There might be a kid that's going to transfer. Scholarship money is going to open up. You're the first person that's going to get it. And, you know, I get in the car and I'm like, I'm going Northeastern. Enough of this. Enough of this PG crap, which was obviously would have been great. But I was like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go to college. You know, I can play. I don't care about scholarship anymore. Like he said, I can play right away and that's what I'm going to do. And sure enough, my dad's like, all right, let's sleep on it and see how I feel tomorrow. So I slept on it. Of course, first thing, I'm good. I'm going to Northeastern. So I called Coach Glavin and, you know, kid got drafted, scholarship money opened up and I ended up getting that. But yeah. And then I get to Northeastern. I start every game all 4 years. And yeah, I wouldn't have traded that for the world, kind of what I had to go through. And going Northeastern, you know, having lifelong friends from Northeastern. And yeah, I think those tough times and, you know, different times where you kind of don't know what's going on. I think that has helped me throughout this baseball journey.
And winning is a big piece of your career as well. You know, you won with Somerset, everywhere you've gone, and that started Northeastern as well. It was your senior year you guys made regionals for the first time in over 40 years, correct? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And did that just kind of start, you know, this is what a winning culture should be, and this is what I want to build?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, throughout my time at Northeastern, it really started to, you know, we obviously had really good teams my freshman, sophomore, really all 4 years. But, you know, that junior and senior year, it started to, like, really, I started to kind of, in a way, it was kind of like, you know, I was the captain of the team. It was kind of, I don't want to say my team, but, you know, I wanted to implement my energy within the whole team and kind of make that the culture. And, you know, I got to give it to Coach, you know, because my senior year, you know, he put together a great schedule, a tough schedule. And, you know, we went into some tough places. You know, my senior year went into Auburn when they were 17-0 and we beat them. So gave them their first loss. You know, we split with Missouri. You know, we played against, we were great in ACC games. So we had great records across all the major leagues. And obviously we dominated at home in our conference, which, you know, our conference is a damn good conference with, you know, UNCW and Charleston, William and Mary, all these kind of schools. And yeah, and it was, you know, it was all about winning at Northeastern. Glavin really, you know, I think he really helped me with that. You know, he didn't care how it happened. He just wanted to win. He's a winner. Obviously part of a winning family, the Glavin family, but, you know, he helped instill that in me, and I kind of just ran with that and kind of made it my own. And yeah, that was a, you know, that day when we got picked, we obviously, you know, we lost like the second game of our conference tournament and just kind of went on a run and ended up losing in the second game in the championship series, which I'm still kind of sick about because we had to beat them twice. We won the first game, our energy, we were fired up. And the game two was supposed to start right after. It started downpouring. So we had to go back to the hotel, wait for 3 hours, and then come back to the field to play, which I think helped them. But yeah, and then kind of sitting around waiting to get to see if we made it. You know, I always had a feeling. I was like, guys, we're going to make it. Like, we put together too good of a year. Like, our RPI is too high. Like, we're going to do this. And, you know, I still watch that video even to this day of kind of us finding out, seeing us getting in. And, you know, it's a great feeling. Like, you know, winning things, obviously winning things here. Didn't win a championship in college, but just winning just brings everybody together. It makes it fixes everything across all sports, all walks of life. Winning cures all. So having that feeling and winning is just such a good feeling, and it's like you don't want to let go of that. So that kind of just drives you to act in certain ways. So
and lo and behold, you get drafted by the winningest team in all of sports, the Yankees. Did you feel a winning culture from the second you got down to Tampa and all of the other minor league affiliates? And how much have you kind of instilled, like you said, your own winning philosophy and work ethic on everywhere you've touched in the Yankees organization?
Yeah, I mean, definitely right when I got in, you know, the first meetings with Joey Reid, who's now with Miami. But, you know, basically his message in the meeting was that just it's different to be a Yankee. You know, we wear, you know, you look sharp going to the fields, you know, you're clean shaven, you're, you know, you play the game the right way. There's no kind of messing around or screwing around, all that kind of stuff. So it definitely, you know, right off the bat, it's like, okay, this is different. You know, I had buddies that got drafted by other teams and they can kind of just do what they want, you know, wear what they want, all that kind of stuff. And, it definitely hit me like, all right, this is different here. Even, you know, Himes in Tampa, it was like, you know, locker had to be clean. Everything was structured. And, you know, I think that's how it should be, honestly. It set a great standard for me and for guys that got drafted with me. And that definitely kind of started everything. And then for me, you know, that outwork everybody mentality, that's kind of what has gotten me where I am today. And that's kind of what I try to instill in everybody. It's like, you know, you can work as hard as you want, but just know I'm gonna be working harder than you. And that's kind of what has gotten me where I am, and, you know, hopefully gets me to where I want to be.
And I would kind of guess being in the minor leagues can be difficult for you specifically because there are so many guys that just want to get to the next level. They want to get to the big leagues, and sometimes winning can be left in the background. Is that kind of something that you've had to instill a culture in, or you've seen a culture shift in over the last few years?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously development, you know, you want to develop into being, you know, a big league, winning big league player. And I think that is the first priority, but you can also want to win and have that winning culture as well. I think that can help with developing as well. I think learning to win is a skill, and you know, you can have a bunch of great players, but if everyone's kind of in their own lane and doing their own thing, you're not going to win. It's just not going to happen. It's never been done. It doesn't work. And you know, so for me, it's always about obviously getting better. Everybody should have that focus of being better. But then kind of once that game starts and you're between the lines, you know, to doing the little things that can help win, whether that be, you know, running hard or, you know, backing up certain plays and spots on the field. So, for me, it's, you know, winning, you know, this is a game. You know, you're trying to score more runs than the other team. That's how you win the game. And, you know, if you have that sole focus and it's like, let's do whatever we can in our power today to win the game, then, you know, I think everything can kind of take care of itself, and you will develop and you will get better having that mindset.
How much pride do you take in being that person that's going to hold people accountable, that's going to say, I'm going to outwork everybody, and just instilling that winning mentality from someone who's from the players' side of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just who I am. And I don't, that's never going to leave me. You know, I think that's what makes me the kind of player I am, that hard-nosed, tough player. You know, I want to push people to be their best as well. That's kind of just, you know, I've always had that leader aspect about myself, you know, wanting others to get better around me, because, you know, when you set that environment, set that culture, it just helps everybody out. And, even you. So, for me, it's, you know, I don't try and, you know, think about it that too much. Like, oh, you're a player, you know, what, like, you push other guys. It's like, I'm going to go about my business a certain way. You know, if I see people, you know, not working hard, you know, I might say something. But at the same time, you know, I work a certain way, you know, I want others to kind of be like, you know, let's do this as well. You know, let's grind and let's work, you know, as hard as he's working. And then, you know, when you have a group of people that, you know, work their butts off, it just helps. It helps the environment. It helps the players. It helps the pitchers. It helps the coaches. So, that sole focus is kind of, you know, what I want to do.
And with that in mind, looking at a lot of the teams you've been on, but especially the 2022 team comes into my head, and looking at where Blake Perkins, Anthony Volpe, Oliver Dunn, Austin Wells, you know, the million guys that are missing, seeing what they've done to instill that culture at the upper levels, at the big leagues, seeing what they've gone on to do at the big league level, you know, how prideful does that make you, and satisfying is that to see them going on to do the things they've done?
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see. You know, I still, you know, talk to Perk weekly. I talk to AV damn near every day. So, Wells, same kind of thing. So, you know, see those guys, you know, I always knew what those guys had, even when they were here. You know, I knew sky was the limit for them. And I knew they could be big leaguers, just like I believe I can be a big leaguer. And, you know, it's just cool to see, because obviously those guys work their butts off and, you know, have a routine and have a aura around them as well, like how they go about their business. And it's just cool to see that, they kind of put everything together and, you know, they're at the peak, you know, they're in the show. So, it's cool to see, but doesn't surprise me at all. I saw this in all those guys, even when they were here. So
thinking about those specific examples, like when Anthony Volpe was here, had a rough start to the season. I mean, he was the same exact person mentally when he was batting 200 versus when he was batting close to 400 in the month of July and August and got the AAA call-up. How important is that mental approach of just being consistent, being mentally strong, and staying within your process to just testing that next level and continuing to keep yourself in a good space going forward?
Yeah, I mean, listen, being the same guy every day is what, like I said earlier, it's what all the greats do. And AV especially, I mean, he's taught me a bunch just how to go about your business. I mean, he's, you know, 4 years younger than me, but, you know, the way he goes about his business, obviously he was a guy that was, you know, hitting first, playing shortstop every day. He knew that no matter what, but it's a different type of pressure. You know, he had, like we've seen, you know, he was doing interviews before every game, you know, that is, you know, as a 20-year-old here in AA. So, you know, that in it itself, like he had a different type of pressure. So the fact that he could, you know, with that start, obviously there's people saying, oh, is he good enough? I don't know if he's good enough. We should go trade for a shortstop, all that stuff like that. You know, he doesn't listen to any noise. He doesn't care what other people say. He goes about his business the right way. He works his butt off, you know, harder than anybody I know. And, yeah, he's that same guy. He's that same guy every day. And, you know, I saw it in spring a bunch with guys, you know, like Judge and Rizzo and DJ and Juan Soto for a little bit. But, you know, these guys, they're all the same person every day. You don't know what they did. And I kind of use an example, like AV had a game down here in AA. It was 0-4-4 strikeouts. And then, you know, next game he's, you know, 3-for-4 with, you know, 3 doubles, and you wouldn't know after the game. He's walking out signing autographs. You wouldn't know what he did during that game. He's the exact same person. And and there's something to be said, you know, obviously that's not easy to do. Trust me, I know, kind of through, you know, when you strike out 3-4 times in a game, you don't want to be all go lucky, woohoo, everything's all good here. But if you can not show anything and be that same guy every day, then it's like, you know, I go about my business one way and one way only. I know the results are going to be there at the end of the year. You know, if I go about my routine and do what I have to do, you know, I know where I can be. I know where I can end up. It's baseball. You're going to go through certain things. So that ability to be the same guy every day, be mentally just locked in, pitch to pitch, is so important. And at the end of the day, the next pitch is the most important pitch, and you can't do anything about what just happened. So easier said than done, but, you know, that's what I'm continuing to work on now, today and in my game. But you know, it's definitely getting better, and I'm excited to kind of keep on going with that.
And for you, I mean, everyone obviously goes through their struggles in their career. And, you know, you had some struggles late at Northeastern. You went, I think it was 2-for-32 at one point in Pulaski, you know, your rookie year. And the injury that you've had after, you mentioned, you know, a tough start to the year this year. Mm-hmm. Was there kind of a moment in your career where it hit you, like, it could be in a positive or a negative way, like, things need to change?
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing a deep dive of my stats right there. So, you know, yeah, obviously I've been through a lot of things as a baseball player. Slumps, like you just said, even times this year, you know. But of course there's times where you're frustrated and you're like, am I built for this? Do I want to keep doing this? Cause it gets tiring mentally. It gets tiring. You know, you get down on yourself. It's bad self-talk. And, you know, I'm continuing to work on that, you know, to this day. But, you know, if you can, you know, like I just mentioned about AV, like if you can kind of, you know, lock in and be so in tune with your routine and live and die by a great routine, that can carry you kind of through those bad times. And then, you know, all of a sudden you kind of just keep building, you know, building at bat by at bat. And all of a sudden, you know, you're 2-for-32. And then all of a sudden, you know, you look up and you're, you know, 10 for your last 30. So, you know, it's part of the game. It's part of baseball. Obviously you don't want to have, you know, times like that, but, you know, if you can stay, you know, if you can stay and take positives and learn from every pitch, you know, I got a, you know, a great quote from Ryan Lamar when I got called up to AAA in 2021. You know, he's like, you know, you got to learn from every at bat. You got to learn. Like, even if you strike out three times, you have to learn. And you know, that at bat's over with. You know, I have to learn from it. There's no point in getting mad about it. So I kind of took that with me. You know, some days, you know, are better than others, but, you know, that ability to kind of learn from those at bats and, you know, go pitch to pitch and know that next pitch is the most important pitch is everything in this game. And yeah, so obviously, you know, you got to fight through times. You're going to feel like crap sometimes. You're going to feel good sometimes. It's part of the game, but, you know, being on that next pitch, and that next pitch is most important pitch, has to kind of take over your body.
There's so many numbers to get lost in, like you just mentioned, and I know how much you value winning. How do you define success over a year of baseball? What do you look back on? Are you looking back at the season-long numbers, the strides you made? What are you thinking about? How are you defining success after the end of 2024?
You know, I think for me, that definition has changed over the years. Now, obviously, you know, success, you want to be like, all right, I want to hit 15 homers. I want to steal 20 bases, you know, all these kinds of things. You know, but for me now in my career, you know, because I haven't been good at this in the past, really ever in my career, is really living and dying by a routine. I've always been a guy that's been, hey, you know, I was 0-for-4. Let's change something up today. And it was always a little tinker. It's always, let's change something. What can we do to get better? Where I kind of got lost and didn't have a great routine. So I think for me, you know, I think the beauty about this year is going to be for me is where I'm at the end of the year, kind of keep going with what I'm doing. And, like I said, you know, I've had years where I started hot, have had years where I was cold, then hot, and then back to cold again, where every year is different. But I have a really good routine right now, and I'm, you know, sticking with it more than I've ever stuck with a routine, even through tough times. And I think that's going to be the beauty of this year is, you know, when I look up at the end of the year, you know, it's going to be a great year. And I stuck with a routine. I lived and died by this process. And, you know, I get through this year after these struggles I had early, I look up and be like, I'm going to be able to get through anything in this game. You know, I started so bad this year. I was in the dumps. I was down bad. I didn't know if I wanted to do this, but I fought through it. I kept doing with what I was doing, and all of a sudden we're going to look up, and I don't want to say what my numbers are going to be or how many homers bags I'm going to have, but I know this year is going to be a great year. I'm fully confident in that, and that's kind of how I view success, is really, really staying true to yourself, being locked in, not getting caught up in outside noise or anything like that, really honing in on your game and living and dying by that day-to-day process.
baseball has changed so much in the past few years, and especially on the player development side. Every organization, there's always turnover and, you know, everything that goes on behind the scenes. From the time you got to the Yankees organization in 2018 to now, what would you say have been the biggest differences?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's differences, you know, every year. You know, I would say the biggest difference, I mean, it's definitely, you know, we have all the resources. There's every possible resource you can think of, we have. Whether that be the pitcher, what kind of pitches he's throwing, the movement on the pitches, you know, drills, if you want to work on some hitting stuff, you know, with the blast motion. It's all these different, you know, things we can utilize to help us get better. And I think, you know, as years have gone by, it's just increased more and more and more and more. So I would say that's the biggest difference, you know, having all those resources and being able to tap into anything. You know, we have numbers on everything. So, you know, there's times where, hey, I want to see, you know, you're not doing well. Hey, what's something I'm doing really well right now where you can kind of almost keep on dominating that? Kind of things like that where maybe there wasn't that right when I first started, where now, you know, there's all this, you know, deep analytics that we can kind of go through and look at and kind of use to our advantage. So I'd say that's the biggest difference.
With that all at your disposal, how have you evolved your preparation? Is there certain things that you don't really pay attention to, or over the course of getting all these different resources, have you evolved the way that you prepare yourself?
I think definitely take more pride kind of watching the pitcher and what I want to do and kind of the approach I want to have. I think that that's something that, you know, I'm still continuing to get better at, but really preparing in that sense of kind of what I'm looking for from that guy, or what he's got to try and beat me, or how guys are going to pitch me, what are my weaknesses. And, you know, obviously every team's going to kind of pitch you a little bit different. There's guys, you know, there's teams that, you know, throw certain pitches and counts that's just what they do as an organization. They don't care your weakness or your strength. That's just what they're going to do. So, being prepared on that sense of, you know, we have all this great information and it's here to help us. And, I'm trying to, you know, be prepared as I possibly can be every day. I, lace them up. So,
and something we talk about all the time too is, you know, your baseball IQ, and you see that in like the play down the line at Hartford. I guess that was last year's one that comes to mind.
That play doesn't get talked about enough.
We'll shine some light on it.
Yeah.
All those little things, like the base running, you know, a lot of defensive things that we see from you. Is that just for you, like, growing up watching baseball, or over time have you just tried to nitpick every single little thing to, you know, become advantage due to your baseball IQ?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both of that. I've always had that knack. You know, whether it be playing little league and the catcher's throwing the ball back to the pitcher and I steal home. It was always kind of trying to outsmart everybody. That's kind of always been how I've played. But yeah, some of the things, they just kind of come to me. You know, it's weird. You know, you think about plays before they happen, and you envision plays before they happen, and they happen. You know, that play in Hartford, you know, I'm sitting during batting practice and I see a ball hit and how it kicked off the wall. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, okay, if I'm hitting and that ball kicks off the wall, that's a triple. And then I'm like thinking, okay, if that ball is hit like that and it's a high fly ball to right, and that wall is pretty weird with the net and the video board, so you don't know the kick. I said, obviously as a hitter, I'm thinking three, but I said, if I'm playing second, I'm going to almost go out there, because if the right fielder is going back and is trying to catch it and then ends up hitting the wall and bounces back hard, I want to be able to get there and then throw the ball. And it was weird because I'm envisioning this during batting practice. And of course that night it happens exactly how I envisioned it. So I think like that, like seeing plays, and you watch big league games, you see plays, you know, obviously we have great infield coordinators with Fio, who is obviously the manager here, and Ryan Hunt, who, you know, will always pick things out and, you know, get opinions on, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think you would have done different? And, you know, that's watching every game too. You know, even when I'm on the bench, you know, seeing plays, okay, this is what I would have done, or kind of seeing like that. So, you know, I think obviously having that knack of always wanting to make plays and do things a little bit different than others, that's always been with me. But to your point, I think, you know, studying plays, seeing, okay, hey, this is where I got to be on a cut, watching, you know, from the up top video, I think watching video and kind of talking about plays like that has definitely helped as well. So I would say it's a mixture of both.
Do you feel like that's your reputation with the younger guys, as someone that's been in this league for a few years, as someone that's been in the organization for this many years? Do you feel like when young guys get called up, are they looking to you for those kinds of tidbits of information, like this could happen and this is how you should probably play, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any example where, you know, a guy will come up to me on the first day and just start asking me stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'm here. I'm here for everybody. You know, if you want to work your butt off and you're grinding and you're all about, you know, getting better, you know, then I want to be a part of that process for you too. So, you know, that comes with anything. That's, you know, hey, about a pitcher, or hey, you know, where do you think I should be defensively on this spot? You know, obviously we have a couple guys this year that are playing positions for the first time. And, you know, I'm always a person that, you know, they can bounce stuff off of, you know, cause I've played, you know, kind of all those positions across the infield. So, yeah, for me, you know, I'm obviously always here, and I love talking about baseball. I love just every aspect of the game. But yeah, there isn't an example I can give about exactly, but there's definitely guys that will come and ask me stuff. And, you know, I talk to Siegs a bunch, talking about second, and, you know, hey, you got more time on that, you don't need to make that play harder than it is, all that kind of stuff, turning two, all that stuff. So for me, yeah, I'm always here for people, and yeah, that's just kind of who I am.
Through your time with the Yankees, is there one story of a specific player or players, I guess, that bought in the most and you saw develop the most over your time working with them?
I'm trying to think. It's hard to kind of think of a specific player. I mean, obviously, I had a really good time this spring with, you know, George Lombard, you know, grinding every day, you know, working our butts off, because we were over on the minor league side throughout camp this year. Obviously, we're over playing, backing up the games a bunch, but, you know, getting in that work in the morning with him, and obviously Ben Cowles, like, we had a really good group where we just grinded. And obviously there's the time, you know, before spring training starts where, you know, I'm out there with AV and, you know, DJ sometimes, all those kind of guys. And it's just fun to kind of work with those guys and, you know, play little games, whether it be, you know, grounders or, you know, guys are trying to get hits on us and all that kind of stuff, like separator kind of plays. So, I don't know an exact example of guys that, you know, completely bought in, because at the end of the day, it is their career. You know, I'm not going to sit here and follow somebody. Hey, you better be working hard. This is how we do things. Like, you know, if they want to grind, they want to work and they want to ask me stuff, then, you know, I'm going to help them. I'm going to do whatever I possibly can to give them what they need, you know, but I'm not here to hold people's hand and say, hey man, you need to work harder. You need to do this. You need to do that. But you know, everybody that I've been around, that I've taken ground balls with, it's always been, let's get after it. Let's work. So, yeah, I love helping everybody. I love asking people stuff that are above me and kind of getting their takes on it. You know, I'm always trying to get better as well. So, yeah, that's something that I love to do. So
last thing is, I mean, the work ethic and the kind of grinding side of it is one part of winning and just developing, but there's also the fun aspect. Winning is fun, and yeah, you've been at the epicenter of all the different kind of chemistry-building rituals with the Patriots, whether it was like the Polaroid camera, the big Patriot hat, and the scroll last year. Mm-hmm. How important is it to just like building fun and looseness in the clubhouse to winning too?
Yeah, you know, winning is fun. Winning cures everything. You know, when things aren't going good, you start winning games, everything is better. Everybody's happier. Everybody's kind of moving a little bit different. So, you're trying to, you know, win obviously as much as possible. And the teams that have fun win more games. That's just kind of, that's been in every sport, really. You go back, you look at any sport, the teams that are having the most fun, the teams that, you know, are with each other the most on and off the field, those are the teams that win. And, you know, having fun things like that, you know, within the clubhouse, within the team, that's all, you know, that's what kind of brings guys together. And, you know, the more guys you have bought in and, you know, on board with that, the better chance you have of winning baseball games. So, yeah, winning is obviously cures everything, like I said, but having fun is, you know, you have to have fun in order to win. So, you know, you don't just not have fun and win games. It just doesn't work like that. So, having fun is the most important part. And, you know, we're coming, you know, we're with each other, you know, for 6 months every single day. So we got to, you got to come in on a daily basis and, you know, look to get better and look to have fun, because this game is fun. It's a game. It's a kid's game that we're getting paid to play. So, if you kind of look at it through that perspective, it kind of, you know, makes everything a little bit better.
Max, this has been fun. This has been a great, insightful conversation. Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with continued success. And once again, we just really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. That was fun.
Incredible stuff from Max Bird. I mean, you and I have been here the last several years, Eli, and we've gotten to know Max very well, you know, obviously off the airwaves, and we've gotten to see firsthand what an impressive player he is. We talked about all the baseball IQ and intellect things, and just to hear his leadership style and the way he motivates these guys and his reputation within the Yankees organization, it was impressive to begin with, but after having that, 45-minute conversation with him, it makes it all the more impressive, and you can't help but have utter respect and admiration for Max Burt.
100%, especially the mental side of the game. I mean, he mentioned the struggles that he's been through, days where he's contemplated, you know, walking away, because that's how tough the grind of minor league baseball is. But to see his journey, his approach is, you know, inspiring, it's motivating, and this is a guy that no box score, no baseball reference page can tell the story of his career. And, you know, no box score could show you what he does on the field with his baseball IQ, his athleticism, all these things. So it was so awesome to, you know, to hear his stories talking about working with George Lombard Jr., the Yankees' first-round draft pick last year. There's an 8-year age difference between those two. But Max Burt took him under his wing during spring training, hearing him talk about the stories at Northeastern, building a winning culture there, including being a senior in high school. He'd actually graduated and going up to Mike Lavin, the head coach for Northeastern and the Huskies, and saying, I am a scholarship athlete, and I want to get that scholarship. And the work that he put in to get there, to get to the professional level, drafted in the 28th round, a round that doesn't even exist anymore, truly a motivating story.
And to have that kind of an influence and a leader in your organization for a 28th round pick, I mean, you talk all about character and makeup and those things that you see in guys like Anthony Volpe when he was coming up, but to have a guy like Max Burt grooming the next generation of players, and just think about firsthand the people that we've seen him touch coming through Somerset in making their big league debuts, even as recently as a guy like Ben Rice, who played a ton of games with Max Burt. It's just so impressive to see the way he's, you know, making his imprint on the Yankees organization literally from top to bottom now, and we wish him nothing but the best. He's had a few short stints in AAA Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and we hope the next of those comes up very soon and eventually leads to an opportunity up at the big league level for Max Burt. Thanks so much for the time, Max. It was great. And until next time, that is going to do it here on the Patriots and Pinstripes podcast. We look forward to bringing you lots of great conversations from around the Yankees organization. It's going to be hard to top this one, but awesome stuff, and we cannot wait to celebrate what's going to be a great second half to come at TD Bank Ballpark and with the Somerset Patriots. For Eli Fishman, I'm Stephen Cusimano, and for all of us here with the Somerset Patriots, I'm Stephen Cusimano saying so long, and we'll see you at the ballpark.